Oh, we're already on.
There we are.
Now, one interesting thing about recording, it's always very good. I think I told you guys this last year, is it's really good to start a recording by, before you start the recording, tell a really good joke, and then start it when people are laughing. And then every single says, I missed it!
No,
right, you know.
Right,
okay, good. So edit it, please, right from that laughter. Good. I want to ask you a story. Ask me a question. Right. Last week we read about the Parsha, the Paraduma. Last week we were reading stories that happened, we assume, in the 40th year in the Midbar. The death of Miriam, the death of Aharon, the war against Sihon and Og. When was the mitzvah of Paraduma and the background of that, which is Tumat Meit, Tumat Ohel, Shiva Yamim, Hazaa, etc., when was that given? What do you think? Don't expect me to carry this load for
either
half an hour.
The first year, either the first year or the 40th year.
Okay, could it have been the 40th year?
No, because they had to use those laws during all the years in the desert.
Good. So please tell me when we know that they had trouble with those laws. When they had an intersection with those laws that got in the way of stuff. Who's the first famous person to die in the Midbar?
Aaron's sons.
Before that.
Korach.
Before that.
The many, many who died after the
Chagigah. Give me a name.
After,
two names. So Nadav and Avihu. What happened to Nadav and Avihu died? By the way, what's the date that they died? The answer is, by the way, this is a great answer to always have whenever anybody asks you any question about anything. You can either say, it depends, or machloket. It's almost always going to be accurate. If I ask you what day did Nadav and Avihu die, the answer is machloket. What are the two possibilities? First of Nisan or?
Tisha B'Av.
No. Let's remember, there were 7 days of Miluim, of investiture for the Mishkan, right? And then on Bayom HaShemini was the big dedication of the Mishkan, and on that day, another one of you died. Mm. When is Bayom HaShemini? We didn't do anything yet. Come on in. But when is Bayom HaShemini? So either Bayom HaShemini is, per Rashi, is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or per Ibn Ezra, the 8th of Nisan. Those are our two choices. So not a review died. This is less than a year after getting out of Mitzrayim. They died. By the way, we know that perhaps some other people died. First of all, because people die. It's kind of like hardwired into who we are. But we know that specific people died, and they may have been other people besides Nadav and Avihu, because what happened a year after leaving Mitzrayim when Moshe commanded Bnei Israel to bring the Korban Pesach? Who approached Moshe? Some people approached Moshe, said, we can't do the Korban Pesach because we're Tmei Meit. What do? Pesach Sheni. Right, so which means Tumat Meit, and the implications of Tumat Meit, because what happened when neither one of you died? What was Moshe's command? Go get Mishael ve'el Safan, your cousins, and have them drag the bodies out. Why do the bodies have to be out?
To make.
And why can't Elazar and Itamar drag him out?
Because they're Kohanim.
And they can't become Tamei.
Right.
Which means Tumat Meit is already there. So please tell me, why is Tumat Meit only introduced with its reality and its fix, its resolution, Parah Adumah, etc., in Parshat Chukat, right in the middle of stories of the 40th year? A little strange. A little odd. Let's go back to what Avram mentioned before, which was the Mekoshesh. Was it Mekoshesh or Mekalel? Who are you talking about? Okay, Mekalel Shabbos, the Shabbos guy. So there was a guy who at some point in the Midbar was Mekoshesh Yitzim. I don't know what he was doing wrong. I don't feel bad. Chazal don't know what he was doing wrong. They bring up two different possibilities. But he was doing something which is a violation of Shabbat. Alright? What do the people who find him do?
They warn him as you're supposed to.
Well, what did they do? What does it say in the text?
Okay.
They bring him to Moshe and they put him in prison because they don't know what to do. Moshe doesn't turn around and say, I know what to do. Moshe says, I don't know what to do. And that's Hashem. And Hashem answers that he's chayav mitah and it's biskila. Now we have a little bit of a problem here. Could that story have happened after Matan Torah? What's our essential belief about Torah Sheval Peh? Our basic belief about Torah Sheval Peh. The one HaKadosh Baruch Hu says a law. Yeah, go ahead.
It interprets Torah Sheval
Peh. Say again?
It interprets
Torah Sheval Peh. Torah Sheval Peh, and it gives you an explanation of what it means. Right, so many of the more fanciful drashot may come later, but the essential meaning, what kapot marim are, and what merorim are, has to be built into the law. That's Sadi Gaon's famous argument against the Karaites. You can't have a law written there without a definition. I'll give you a simple example. Does the Torah say you're not allowed to steal?
No, you can't. That's kidnapping.
Right? You can't steal. Right? Can't steal, correct?
Doesn't that only apply to kidnapping?
No. Lo tigrov is in the Asarat. Lo tigzol. Okay? It's in Kepesh Kadoshim. You're okay with not stealing? Good. All right. So in the meantime, guys, watch your stuff. Okay, yeah, good. Remind me your name.
Sarah Marcus.
Okay. Sarah and I are walking down the street. Okay? I see a $20 bill on the street. I say, that's mine. Sarah, being fleeter of foot than I am, runs ahead and puts her foot on it. I come up and I say, hey, look, it's Reb Judah. And she looks up, right? And she picks her foot up and I grab it. Who owns it? I'm not concerned with an answer. Do you understand that we have to define possession? By the way, if she owns it, then what am I? I'm a thief. But if I own it, then I'm not a thief. So you can't have a rule of lo tigzol without definitions of property.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Somebody is dying, like in front of your eyes, bleeding out, car accident. Right? And this is somebody you were always angry at. It's a crazy scenario. And you put in the final punch. Lo tirtzach. Did you violate it or not? Well, it kind of depends on how we define life. Every mitzvah in the Torah assumes basic definitions, otherwise you can't act on them. This is going to side this famous big argument against the Karaites who denied Torah Sheval Peh. He said, you can't have Torah Sheval Peh, it doesn't work without it. Alright? So in the same way, when Hashem said to Moshe, Mechalaleha mot yumat, on Har Sinai, if you're Mechalal Shabbat, you get killed, we assume Torah Sheval Peh means that he told him orally, what kind of mitzvah is it? Skila. Right? Which means, how could Moshe, a year and a half later, suddenly be wondering, what do we do with this guy who's Mechalal Shabbat? Besides the Hatra'ah problem, which is really an impossible thing to get over. Very difficult thing. There is a principle that everybody, and I'm going to bring in the one you think doesn't agree with this, everybody agrees with. And that principle is, Ein Mukdam Umuchar Batorah, which means the Torah is not written in chronological order. Now there's several ways this plays out. For instance, the Torah will tell an entire story, like the life of Abraham and have Abraham die, and then it'll backtrack and say, meanwhile, back at the ranch, Yitzhak's doing this. Because if you look at it, the stories overlap. Abraham dies, and then we hear about Yitzhak doing stuff that happened while Abraham was still alive. So there's a lot of that kind of overlapping in stories. But you have it explicitly in Sefer Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar starts on what day? The first day of the second month, what we call Iyar, a year after we left Egypt. Eight chapters later, we hear, on the first day of the first month, Hashem said, which is a month earlier, eight chapters later. And by the way, that famous day, the first day of the Mishkan, what Sefer is it told about? What Sefer is it mentioned in? On the first day of Nisan. What Sefer is it in? What? Again? Almost all of Vayikra is on that day. Good. What other sefer is it in?
Bamidbar.
What? Bamidbar. We have that whole longest chapter in Chumash of the 12 Nisim bringing their korbanot starting on that day. By the way, it's also in Shmot. Which means that we do not have a chronological order in the Torah.
It's all the same year. It's not just...
It's the same day. Wow. Same exact day. And I'm doing this to raise a question. And the question is, who knows five? And last year we did, who knows, five with something very different. Just five things happen on Shiva Asar Tammuz, five things happen on Tisha B'Av, different five. Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu ever tell Moshe, please write Chamisha Chumshei Torah? Please write Chamisha Chumshei Torah. We don't have a record of that. What do we have Hashem telling Moshe to do? Please take a look at passage 1. All right, this is from Kitisa after the Egel. This is the first thing Hashem commands Moshe to write. Write these words. These words seem to be parts of the Brit in Shemot. The Brit is based upon these things. Okay, that's it. We don't hear about Moshe being commanded to write anything until we get to the end of the Torah. What is Moshe commanded to write at the end of the Torah? And therefore, by the way, we're all commanded to write one of these.
That's what we know as a Sefer Torah?
Yeah, except not exactly. Not exactly, Sarah. That's good. Take a look at source 2. All right, source 2. V'ata kitvu lachem et hashira hazot. Hashem tells Moshe and Yehoshua, you guys write this shira. What shira is this? Anybody know? Hazinu. Perfect. Thank you. Right? And lamdat yisbin Yisrael sima b'fihem, etc. And in the next pasuk, v'ayichtov Moshe et hashira hazot v'ayimahu v'ayilamdat b'nei Yisrael. He writes the shira. So how does the Rambam explain it? He says, oh, the Torah says you have to write the Shira, but since you can't write a Shira independently of the rest of the Torah, what do you have to do to write the Shira? You have to write an entire Torah. And there's the mitzvah, Tirat Sefer Torah. But you notice, Moshe wasn't told, write Bereishit, leave four spaces, write Shemot, leave four spaces, make sure to include this and that in it. And by the way, Chazal in several places give Moshe a lot of editorial license in what he put where. I'll give you one quick example of this. Okay? When were we commanded not to eat the gid hanasheh? Gid hanasheh, the sciatic nerve of the animal. What? Right. So that's Rabbi Yehuda's position. Based on that, Rabbi, what's your name? Yechiel and Rabbi Yehuda agree that, by the way, if you were to eat the gid hanasheh of a pig, you'd be chayev. You know why? Because Yaakov was allowed to eat pig. Wasn't he?
I
didn't say what he did. I'm asking what he was allowed to do. Right? So Behuda's position is that since Yaakov was allowed to eat any animal and he was forbidden from the Gid Anasheh, Gid Anasheh applies to any animal, even a horse. The Chacham disagreed. Chacham said it only applies to a kosher animal. Why? Because Gid Anasheh was given at Har Sinai. So why do you think it was given to Yaakov? Oh, anybody want to say why Yechiel thinks it was given to Yaakov? Where is the law of Gidon Hashem? What parsha? What book? It's a Greshi. Parsha Vayishlach. Hakein lo yachlum and Yisrof Gidon Hashem. So, Rabbi Yehuda looks at it and says, look, there's a command right there. Not really. It just says, Bnei Yisrael don't need it. Chachamim turn to Rabbi Yehuda and say, they're not called Bnei Yisrael, they're called Bnei Yaakov. Bnei Yisrael is only after Mount Torah. Therefore, this was actually given in Vayikra.
What?
Oh, I mean, wow. The word Bnei Yisrael, the phrase Bnei Yisrael, it's not exactly accurate, but the way Chacham say it is, Bnei Yisrael, they're only called Bnei Yisrael after Har Sinai. Okay. Right? So therefore, when it says in Bereishit, Al-Kein lo yechlu Bnei Yisrael, which means it's really a passage from Vayikra. And it got put here. And the Gemara Chulin, Daf Kuf Aleph, says, it was put in Bereishit so you'd understand the reason for this mitzvah. Why don't we eat this weird part of the animal? Because of the Yaakov's wrestling match.
So the reason for the mitzvah is from Bereishit, but it only came in mitzvah at our school.
Exactly. Okay. Which means Yaakov could eat Gidon Hashem.
Right.
Maybe he avoided it, but he could eat it. We're not allowed to eat it because we're in Har Sinai. Which means you've got to ask, so why is it in Bereishit? So you see more evidence that the Torah is not presented in the order and the mitzvot are not given where they're given, so there's got to be something else going on. I'd like to point out that even though we have the convention of referring to the Sfarim of the Torah, we don't do this, by the way, with Nevi'im and Tuvim. What are the names of the books of Nevi'im and Tuvim generally? What are they? What gives them their name?
The person that's about
either the hero or the author,
right.
Or else, in some cases, the general theme. Right? Okay? But, like Divrei Hayamim doesn't actually say Divrei Hayamim and Divrei Hayamim, but Divrei Hayamim is what it's about. But we have this weird convention when it comes to Chumash. We do the same thing with our Parshat HaShavua. What do we name it?
First.
The first word. Right? The Rishonim referred to the first book as Bereshit Bara. And Ve'elah Shmot. And Vayikra Moshe, or Vayikra. right? And Vayedaber Bamidbar, right? And Ela Hadvarim. They refer to it by the first word, first couple of words. How did the Greeks refer to it? You know this very well.
Genesis,
Exodus, Leviticus, which, by the way, is also the way we refer to it. What do Chazal call Vayikra? It's on passage 5. Torah Kohanim. Leviticus. That's what Leviticus
right.
is. Right? What do they call Shmot? Take a look at. It's mentioned from the Barbanel.
I'm sorry.
Right? And they call Sefer Geula. Exodus.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Out, going out. Right? What do they call Bamidbar? Take a look. It's from Mishnah Yoma. Chumash HaPkudim, which is just Hebrew for numbers. Census. Right? Parenthetically, what's the plural of census?
Sensi?
Right. So there was a rabbi in the 60s. They had just come up with the idea of rabbis. And there's a rabbi in the 60s, and he was talking about all of the demonstrations happening on college campuses, and he was trying to be mellifluous and show off his great knowledge. He said, and all of the trouble we're experiencing on our college campi, and I was like, what the heck are you talking about? Right? So campus is campuses, and by the way, census is censuses. Sensei is a different thing. Right?
Sensei,
that's wax on, wax off. Okay. But Chomash HaPkudim is numbers, because what is Bamidbar? It starts with the census, ends with the census. Right? By the way, what is Devarim called? And it's possible Devarim calls itself this name, Mishnei Torah. Continually called Mishnei Torah, which, by the way, what does Mishnei Torah literally mean? A repetition of the law, in other words, Deuteronomos, a second law. So it's basically the same thing. And you see those in sources 3 through 7. So I'm going to suggest, and this is like a very broad thing, I'm going to suggest when we look at Chumash, we have to look at it not as a timeline, although it does follow a certain timeline from Bereishit until the middle of Shemot, and then at the end of Bamidbar. But we have to look at it as 5 separate books, is the way the Ramban sort of introduces the Sfarim, that are thematically unique. Each one has its own theme. But I want to take it one step further, and you can understand the title I gave to the paper, which I made up and probably is going to get skewered for. A pentastory, meaning a story that's told from 5 different perspectives. Right? Now, I don't know if that's what pentastory means. Me'ayom bahu, that's what it means. Because if we said it in a Haskett, it's right. All right. Let's think about it. What is Bereishit? What is the book Bereishit?
Lahavdil, it's the founding fathers.
It is the founding fathers. Is Bereishit about tribes, nations, territory, laws, or individuals?
But individuals.
All individuals. You will find what? All of those are kind of buried and subtly kind of discreet there. But the overt presentation in Bereishit consistently is the individuals. As a matter of fact, there's a phrase that shows up in Bereishit that shows up hardly anywhere else. In one passage in Shemot, there's kind of an evocation, a little passage in Bamidbar, and that's the word toldot. Toldot. What are toldot?
Generations.
Generations. This one begat that one begat that, and begat that. It's all names, individuals. And Sefer Bereishit, if you look through it, is the story of the individual. What did Avram do? What did Yitzchak do? I mean, Ishmael. What about Esav and Yaakov? What about Yosef, the brothers? All individuals. There's no working as a nation. There's no even tribe. Correct. Correct. So this is presenting who we are as individuals. And it makes sense because we're not more than individuals yet. Correct. What shifts in Sefer Shemot? From the very beginning of Sefer Shemot.
We're a nation.
What are we called?
Yisrael.
By the way, who's the first person to call us an Am?
Paro.
I'll tell you a little secret about the word Am. What does the word Am mean?
Nation.
Good. What does the word Am mean, though, let's say in Yehoshua Shoftim Shmuel?
It's like Am. Like.
And by the way, it means the same thing in Chumash, but let's go backwards. Right? The word Am means army. In every example that you see of the word Am, you'll see it's an army. Now go back and think about what Paro said. Hinei am b'nei Yisrael, rav ve'atzum mimenu. Their army's bigger than ours. And what's his next concern? If there's a war, they're going to fight and beat us up. Mm. He identifies us as an army. And that's how we're described, as leaving and the machane and everything else. You know, tzivot, tzivot echem, etc. But the Yam. But it's all about the individual. Please take a look at the very last pasuk in Bereshit, which is source 9. Vayamad Yosef ben Me'abai Hashanim ve'achatu oto v'yisem baron b'mitzrayim. It's all the individual. It ends with the story of an individual. And throughout, we have an individual. Exactly what is Shemot about? Shemot's about a lot of things. There's a lot of stuff in Shemot. But there's a tremendous shift that happens right at the beginning, where suddenly the individual is no longer the significant player. As a matter of fact, think about it. What names do you find in Shemot? Names of individuals.
Moshe.
Moshe, Aaron.
Paro.
Right. Paro's not a name. Right?
Title.
Right. Who else? Well, it's Shifrapua, whom Sidi Barbanel, probably
Yisro.
Egyptians, right? Yitro. What? Amram Yocheved, right?
Sipora.
You think about how few names, Sipora, how few names there are in Shemot, and what is the constant presentation in Shemot? It's the nation goes here and the nation goes there. It's not Shvatim. You notice that. It's the nation. The nation is working. Moshe comes in. Paro decrees the nation has to work harder. They get angry at Moshe. Moshe comes to Hashem. Hashem says, go back anyways. And then there's the Makkah. And then Paro says, okay, what does the nation want? The nation wants to go out and worship God. Okay, they can go. Ah, forget it. I take it back. On and on and on and on. It's all about the nation. Then the nation marches out. What does the nation do when they get out? They got confused in the desert. Then the nation comes to Yam Suf and the nation complains. We're not given names. We assume their names. We're not given names. And then the nation, Yam Suf, Az Yashir Moshe, Uvnei Yisrael. Not V'chaim V'yidutun V'asaf V'moshe Pippin. Right? We have Moshe Uvnei Yisrael Tashir Azot. Amazing thing. And the most powerful statement is, of course, the one we love to quote, which is the famous Rashi in the beginning of Ma'amad Har Sinai, Perikutet, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. There, however many people, 2 million people, however many it is, are described in the singular as camping. It's a nation. And everything here is about a nation. And there's a brit made, not between God and the individual, which you have in Bereshit, twice with Abraham, a mention with Yitzchak, and again with Yaakov, but it's a brit with a nation. So there's a whole new dimension to this relationship. Okay. Go to Vayikra, source 12. And by the way, we'll move on, but if you take a look at source 12 anchors, and somebody said it before, source 12 anchors Hashem's Dibur in the, where? The Mishkan, the Omoed. And everything about Sefer Vayikra is one thing, which is about Kiddusha, essentially Kiddushat the Mishkan. By the way, how many names do you have in Sefer Vayikra?
Very, very few.
Moshe, Aaron, Nadav Aviv Elazar and Tamar, Mishael and Tzafan, help clean them up, right? And then Shlomit Pativri Lamatadan, you know, the mother of that Mikalel. That's it. Who else do you have? Less than 10 names. That's pretty wild. Vayikra is not about individuals. It's not about a nation. Vayikra is about God. It's about the Shekhinah. And look at this pasuk, pasuk 13, which is somewhat of an anthem here in the book. V'lo techalu et shem kodshi v'nikdashti v'toch b'nei Yisrael. What is Sefer Vayikra all about? It's about creating Kiddusha inside of Am Yisrael, creating Hashem's presence inside of Am Yisrael, and the consequences of Am Yisrael violating that Kiddusha and how it gets fixed. And the Kiddusha starts in the Mishkan, and then it goes out to the Machaneh. That's the entire Vayikra. By the way, you read, you're stuck in a Motel 6. Alright? No books, and
King
your
James
Kindle's
Bible.
Out of juice.
But the King James Bible.
But you got the Gideon Bible in the thing, you pull it out and say, oh, King review Bible. What I learned in day school. You start reading from Genesis, Jonathan, right? The Lord hath created, right? And you read through, all right? And you get all the way to the end of Leviticus when suddenly the lights come on and you go back to what you want to do, which is to watch something on cable. So, who are the Nassim? Yeah, who are they? You're right. You don't know. Well, where do the tribes camp?
Around the Mishkan.
I got no idea. I never heard of it. I never heard of it. TV came on after Vayikra. I don't want to read anymore, right? Well, how about who camps with whom? How about even bigger? Is there even such a thing as a tribe? Where does all of that start?
Bamidbar.
And Bamidbar is all about tribes. Take a look at the beginning of Bamidbar. The beginning of Bamidbar. And again, the beginning of each sefer and the end of each sefer broadcast what they're about. And again, this is overlapping in time. Because Bamidbar is going to jump backwards to the first month, from the second month to the first month. It's going to overlap stuff that happened in Vayikra. And maybe even overlapping stuff that happened in Shmot, because we're not going in order. We're going theme. And you'll see what the theme's about in a couple minutes. And that's new phrasing. That's Bamidbar phrasing. And then Elikoy done the same matotavotam. The word mateh. By the way, what does the word mateh mean? Just for a little fun. What? What's mateh? Mateh. It could be a tribe. What else could it be?
A fly?
Staff. Right? A staff. Mateh Aaron. Good. What other word do we have in Hebrew that has the same two functions of tribe and staff? Shevet. Right. Why are those words have those double meanings? Why does the same word for stick mean group? Because who does the group come around? The guy holding the stick. Right? The guy who's holding the shevet revolves around him. So, remember the story in Korach where they take a matet for each shevet.
Right.
Right? Okay. So the word matot is a key word throughout Bamidbar, all the way to the end of Bamidbar. But it's better than that. Turn the page. Again, an anthemic statement. We had it in Vayikra. Look at source 16. Ish al diglo ve'otot leveit avotam. Diglo here probably means camp. Everybody's going to camp with their signs, whatever that signs may mean, whether they have particular colors or whatever. Leveit avotam. So they're going to camp by tribes. They're going to camp with their signs. They're going to camp. It's all tribal. If someone were to ask you, how many nations are we? Well, if you ever worked for the UJF, you'd say one. We are one. But if you study Chumash, you'd probably have to answer 1, 4, 12. I don't know. Right? Now you wouldn't say that publicly because it sounded really weird on, you know, JM and the AM. But to be honest with you, the presentation in Bamidbar has 12 different groupings that have their own identity and then are grouped into 4 larger groupings, a machaneh, and then have their particular place. And suddenly we're introduced, and we saw that already at the beginning of the parak, we're introduced to a new type of name. Beforehand we had dynamic leadership, a Moshe and Aharon, and then Aharon's sons, and then Moshe's parents. Who are we suddenly introduced to in a more hierarchical fashion? Nisim. Each Shevet has a Nasi. Shevet Levi's got a whole different system because Shevet Levi serves a different function. Suddenly it's all about Shvatim. It's all about Mishpachot. And it cuts all the way through. There's a powerful scene. It shows up 3 times in Bamidbar. I gave you the last one here because Bamidbar ends with this to make a statement. But there is a phrase that shows up 3 times in Bamidbar. I do not believe it shows up anywhere else in Chumash. And that is Laman Nigara. Why should we be cut out of our family? Of our family. It starts with people coming to Moshe and saying, we don't want to be cut out of the nation. Who are those people? People who were Tamei Meit and don't want to be cut out of the Pesach. Moshe's solution is Pesach Sheni. That's what Hashem tells him. Where else does Laman Nigara show up? I'll lift my hand. We're talking 5 tonight, so 5 is the key number. Brotzlovchad. Right? When Brotzlovchad come to Moshe and say, hey, you're inheriting and sons, but our father has no sons, why should our father's name be wiped out? Lama yigarash emavinu mitoch mishpachto. Representation in the family. And Moshe turns around and says, Kei Brotzlovchad davrot, they're right, and naton tetem em nachala, they get inheritance. Look at source 17. Comes family members of Chogla, Milkanu, etc., and say to Moshe, time out. And you got to wonder, why is this here? Why isn't this back in Pinchas when Benot Tzlochad got their territory, because they didn't get it yet, but their promised territory. And then their other tribe members come and complain. What's the complaint? Chogla is going to marry Chaim Yankel from Zvulun, and all of our land's going to go to her land's going to go to Zvulun. We're going to lose our land. Our family inheritance is going to go to another family. And what does Moshe say? Oh yes. By the way, there's another rule. If a girl inherits land, she has to marry within the Sheva. And that lasts until they come into the land and Tu B'Av, etc. Beautiful. But why isn't this with Benot Tzlochad? Because the Torah wants to end Bamidbar with this message. Because what's this message of Bamidbar? Tribal. Family. So let's step back and think about what this is telling us. The first four books, we're going to get to Dvarim in a minute. What does this tell? Why is the Torah organized this way? Because first, we encounter HaKadosh Baruch Hu as individuals. Historically. And then we have this relationship of a nation. Sitting in the middle of the nation is this Mishkan, which houses HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then there's suddenly the identity of family. Family creates a complex but necessary vehicle for identification. Think about this. How did you first learn to light candles? That's all right. How did you first learn to light candles? You saw your mom. I first learned how to put on tefillin. Saw my dad putting on tefillin. How do you know what to do when somebody comes to the door and you open the door and someone you don't recognize and needs some help? You see how your parents do it. We relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through family. And so that's the shift in Bamidbar. Bamidbar is about family. It's about the Sheva, Manamateh, the Mishpachot Beit Avotam. So what's the Dvarim? So I was asked to put together a curriculum for kind of a very quick review of Chumash. Half-hour reviews, okay. But a very quick review of Chumash. So they said they wanted cutesy titles. Okay, Bereshit is Meet the Individual. Shmona is Meet the Nation, which I think was a Sunday morning program. Vayikra is Meet God, or Meet the Law. Bamidbar is Meet the Family. So what's the variant, anybody?
Meet the Torah.
Meet close. Meet the teacher. What is Dvarim? Dvarim is all Moshe's farewell speech. Moshe Rabbeinu. Take a look, please, at a wild statement at the bottom, source 24. Anybody want to tell me why there's 24 sources in here, by the way? Okay. If you get it by the end, then you get an extra thing of chalent if it's not gone. Right? Yes, it is. Okay. Right? 24 books in Tanakh. Very good. You get the extra chalent. Just wait for something.
I was also saying that.
Okay, you both can split it.
Let's
keep
talking. I already have like 2 bowls.
What?
I already have like 2.5 bowls.
2.5 bowls?
Yeah.
Good. Now.
24 is how many bowls of chalent he had.
What?
24 is how many bowls of chalent he actually had.
Good. I'm a Navi. All right. The Mishnah in Masachet Megillah says that what we read on this coming Sunday, on a fast day, is brachot to klalot. We don't do that. We have a different minhag. Brachot to klalot. The tochacha. And the Mishnah says you're not allowed to stop in the middle of the tochacha, meaning you don't stop and give a new aliyah to somebody. You don't want an aliyah. I think we're all familiar with that. By the way, the Valkyria hopefully is going so fast you wouldn't even be able to stop in the end of the aliyah. Amar Abaye, Loshanu Ela B'Klalot Shebetorat Kohanim. Abaye says something here that I would never have the chutzpah to say. I almost didn't have the chutzpah to copy it, but he said it. He said, this is only true about the Chukotai, the curse at the end of Vayikra. About Kolot Mishnei Torah Poseik, but you're the one in Kitavo, which is, by the way, far worse and far longer, has two words in it that are so vulgar we don't even say them in Shul. We read different words. You're allowed to stop in the middle and give the, you know, stop and have a new aliyah. My Tama, what's the reason? Halalu v'lashon Rabbi Mamurot. The one of Vayikra is in the plural. Moshe was saying it, meaning God was dictating, he was saying it. Halalu, but the ones in Dvarim, Balashon Yachid Amurot. They're said in the individual. How do you say Shema? Shema Yisrael? Adonai Yohenu Adonai Echad V'Yahav Ta. Not V'Yahav Ten.
Oh, wow.
All of Sefer Devarim speaks to the individual. So a couple of exceptions to that. But take a look at the sources, for instance, in source 19, in source 20, right, in source 22. They're all in the singular. Moshe mipi atzmo amaran. That's a weird phrase. Moshe said it on his own, which opens up a whole other discussion about canonization and why Sefer Devarim is in Chumash, if it was Moshe on his own. We'll leave that for another time. I'm back next year. But what is Devarim? Devarim is meeting the Rebbe. The Rebbe is teaching you Torah. The Rebbe is another vehicle for you to get to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have a vehicle which is the family, and you mature, and you grow up, and you get past this is what we do to saying, now I want to find out why. And I want to find out the details. And that's what the job of my Rebbe is. And you'll take a look at something interesting here. We've come full circle. How does the Torah end? And I'll be honest with you, I put this shiur together. I was comfortable with it except for this last part. I scratched my head for a little while trying to figure out what's going on. How does the Torah end? How does Devarim end? Because remember, every Sefer ends with a statement that's emblematic of that theme. How does the Torah end? Moshe's death and the eulogy for Moshe. But you think about it, what's Sefer Bereishit about? The individual. We end Devarim where we began Bereishit. The greatness of the individual. To have this individual who became Lo Kam Navi Yisrael Kamoshe Asher Yidao Adonai Panim Apanim. Somebody who the Torah ends with his eulogy. And now take a look at all five books. You have essentially a pyramid, sorry for the imagery, a pyramid where at the very bottom, at the beginning and end, it's at the individual. The individual forefather, the individual Rebbe. You move up and it's the collective. And who's sitting in the middle? Who's the focus of our attention? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shekhinah. And the entire Torah is crafted in a way that we see that in the middle. Just to end with what was it, 45 for 45, what was it?
45 ideas in 45 minutes.
Right, so I'm going to give you idea 46, which will take 45 minutes. But it's something I did years ago with a group of 12 or 13-year-old boys who are a challenge at camp, and they weren't getting along that well. Man, it's hard in a bunk sometimes, in a bunk in a different kind of camp. And I have them stand in a circle back to back, like their backs are to the circle, no hands. And I asked them to talk about, like, what were they experiencing there? I said, well, we're not seeing each other, and we're backs to each other, and we've got no connection. I said, great, turn around. So they all turned around. I said, okay, what's changed? So now we're looking at each other. How connected are you? We're not so connected. I said, okay, hold hands. Right? You can get 12-year-old boys to hold hands if you want. Right? So they hold hands. I said, okay, now what? Now we've got a connection. I said, great. Okay, please take a look at that little basket I put in the middle of the circle. What just changed? We're all connected and we have a common focus. And this was in the evening. I said, okay, great. Now everybody look up at the moon. Now what just shifted? I said, our focus now went to something bigger than us. Okay, guys, let's think about how we could spend the next 4 weeks working together on something that's focused and bigger than us. And that's the binyan of the Torah that we have with Sefer Vayikra in the middle. I think that's it.